Hi, welcome to Beyond Averages, our weekly data podcast where we decode the story one number at a time. The opposition and the government are at loggerheads again, this time over the issue of delimitation. As the date for delimitation nears, with the process expected to start after the census in 2026, opposition parties led by those leading the southern states have opened a front against the population-based delimitation. Tamil Nadu CM M.K. Stalin is calling for a freeze for another 25 years while also asking for fair delimitation. But what's fair to the south may not be fair for the north. We would like to welcome our guests, Ajit Fadnis, Professor, Associate Professor at IIM Indore, and Paras Jasrai, Senior Analyst and India Ratings and Research, to the show. Welcome. Let me take you to the basic data behind what we are discussing today and why it's an issue. If you look at the screen here, Uttar Pradesh's population in 1971, when the first delimitation happened in 73, based on the 71 census, was 15.3% of the total population. This has increased to 17%. Bihar's has gone up from 7.68% to 9.1%. On the other hand, if you look at Tamil Nadu, the population has declined from 7.5% to 5.5%. Similarly, Kerala, there has been a population decline from 4% to 3.3%. So basically, there has been a decline in population in the southern states, while the northern states have an increase in the share of population in the country. Also, but if you look at another aspect of it, we'll find out that the economy aspect presents a different picture. The South's economy has grown faster and is almost at par with that of the North. South accounted for 30.8% share of the economy in 23-24, and the North had a 31% share. You have to keep in mind that South has fewer states and smaller states than the North as well. This was 24.6% in 1970-71 compared to 34.3% for the North. Paras, before I go to Dr. Fadnis, let me get to you first. Explain to us what has happened to economy between the North and the South over the last five decades.
So if you see in the five decades that are there for the Indian economy, the key transformational period was the 1990 reforms. And there, if you see thereafter, from 1970 to till about that 90s period, early 90s period, the North and South were broadly, there was not much difference. But then thereafter, it has seen that with the kind of liberalization that happened, unshackling the Indian economy, and thereafter we have seen that the southern states have leapfrogged to a stage where they are much higher placed. And the reason why that happened was that while we have seen that there has been a diversification in terms of different economic sectors and policy implementation as well from the southern states, where they have focused more on IT services and other services as well, not only the IT ones. And newer services are also coming, especially in states like Karnataka, and you see it in Tamil Nadu as well. And manufacturing has also been witnessing a very transformational thing in Tamil Nadu, especially where we have seen that they are trying to diversify their different districts also, not only the Chennai and the Coimbatore, which are there. So, but on the contrary, we have seen that the North has been like very slow in terms of that transition. It has mostly been more inclined towards low productivity sectors such as agriculture, or whether you see in within services as well, you have seen that the share of low value-added retail trade and wholesale trade is something which is there in the economic activity of different, whether it's Bihar, UP, or for that matter. So that has been one of the reasons why we see that the southern states have caught up very well. And they continue to do so because that policy continuity is something which is very important for the investors, and that they get that governance continuity also, whether it's different political parties. There is a very less reversal that happens. So that is also a very key factor explaining why the southern states have been very, they have the kind of economic transformation that they have witnessed. compared to the normal ones.
Dr. Fadnis, let me come to you. And can you decode for us the political economy of this delimitation debate? Of course, the population of South has declined, but in terms of economy, it's done much better. So how do you square off these scenarios? The last time this was to happen was 2001. We put a delay for 25 years. Can we do that again?
Yeah, I'm not able to hear your question, but let me make some, you know, broad comments, primarily from the public policy perspective. Right, and I want to highlight that there are two aspects here that need to be considered. One is the aspect about one vote, one value. The fact that, you know, no matter where you stay in the country, no matter what your class, what your caste, what your religion, wherever you come from, everybody's vote should have the same value. So that is one aspect to that. The second aspect to the entire debate is about whether performance should matter or not. Right? And so these are the two things. If you look at one value, one vote, that will tell you that, you know, you should move towards, you know, trying to, you know, do limitation, delimitation as per the latest census that comes in. But as my knowledgeable colleague just mentioned, there is also a difference in performance across states, because some states have done better in terms of population control. So how do you balance the two aspects together? One aspect is to, you know, follow one vote, one value, which may mean giving representation to higher representation to some states which have increased in population more, but also on the other hand, you know, give importance to performance. And that is the central dilemma that is there in the delimitation issue currently.
Let me take you something for that. That's an interesting aspect that you put. Let me just go here. See, if we run three different scenarios, and these are scenarios based on what can happen on delimitation part. So what we did was we ran a population-based scenario where we said that if the delimitation were to happen based on population, what would be the seat share for each of the states? Then we ran a fixed scenario where we decided if we were to take the 1971 census and increase the seats to 888 member house, which is supposed to be the maximum that it can go. And then we ran a third scenario where we used a mixed factor where we said that let's fix the 543 seats as they are, and then the next seats are decided based on the population scenario. Now, in this case, look at what happens to Andhra Pradesh. Now, fixed factor, it gets 41 seats out of those 888 member house. Right, population base, it gets 34, and in mixed factor, it gets 38. So mixed factor is certainly better here. Now let's look at Uttar Pradesh, which is the main thing here. 148 in terms of the population base, fixed factor is 131, and mixed factor is 138. Now there's another issue to it. If you do a fixed factor, you increase the number of seats, everybody gets higher seats, but this ratio remains the same. Uttar Pradesh and Bihar would be less represented by about 20 or 18%. Rajasthan also, because these states have seen a massive increase in population over the last few years. On the other hand, if you do a population-based scenario, then Tamil Nadu and Kerala lose out by about 30%. So what's the best way to go about this, Dr. Fadnis?
Yeah, so I think, you know, one of the things that we need to consider is that, you know, the last census on the basis of which, you know, we have the current allocation of seats across states is the 1971 census, right? Suppose that we have not done a reallocation of these seats. So, you know, we are talking about, you know, a decision that was taken 40 years back, right? We can't suddenly make drastic changes because, you know, a lot of the population distribution across states have changed a lot. So I think the one aspect that I would highlight here is to kind of not look at very drastic changes, but at the same time, keep the roadmap, that we should have a roadmap that within the next 20 years or so, we should be able to achieve, you know, the target of one person, one value, one vote, right? And so the question is, how do you then, you know, decide what should be the roadmap? And my suggestion would be, Fine. I mean, let us increase the number of seats, particularly for states which are underrepresented, but not make a drastic change. But let us stagger it over a period of time so that the other states don't feel so badly affected. That's number one. And secondly, it would also give time for the other states who are likely to be badly affected to also increase their population. I wanted to highlight here that, there's something in called the replacement rate, that is a total fertility rate, right? And that has an ideal value of 2.1, which is the replacement rate. So the central, discussion here is that some of the states, such as, Uttar Pradesh and Bihar, have replacement rates about 2.1, right? And that's the reason why their population growth has been high. But some of the other states that are also under consideration, like Tamil Nadu and Kerala, they have gone below the replacement rate because they have worked on population control, but they have gone far below that, right? So they are right now at fertility rates of 1.7, 1.6 and so on, which is too less. So if we stagger the changes in representation, we give time for states that have high TFR to reduce their TFR over time, but we also give time to states that have very low TFR, which have gone below the 2.1, to increase and reach a 2.1 level, right? Or at least move in that direction, if not increase.
Paras, is population increase, it might be a solution for delimitation over a period of time, but is that something that economically we should look at?
That is a very tough one, aspect that has been there. I mean, currently we are witnessing the kind of climate change impact that is there. And if we go on increasing the population rates, especially the ones that are done well on the population control part, then it totally defeats the purpose of what the initial exercise when it was meant to be, when we had a population which was quite high and we wanted to control that growth over a period of time. But then if we just go back on that and say that, okay, the southern states also, they should also now increase their population rates. Because currently, if you see, we are seeing the effects of climate change. Recently, we had the massive earthquake in Myanmar and Thailand, and all of that is gradually having an impact. If you see this year, so far till January, February, they have been the hottest months so far. So all of that cumulative impact is having on the environment, and population control is something which should be the focus. And the solution can be that, that you can, or sort of what it was implemented in the 15th Finance Commission as well, that do not penalize the states who have focused more on population control, but you neutralize them, that so as to see that states that have focused more on population control, you could give them the benefit of through the criteria, and then you can reduce the number of seats for the states which are not focused on population control. This is something which would require consensus at the political level, and because it's a very important issue if India wants to be a Viksit nation by 2047. Definitely, it is one of our very important issues.
Dr. Fadnis, let me go back to you on this population idea, because the thing is, okay, southern states going for a population increase and northern states still trying to control population. It would still take a lot of time to taper off and get you a solution that you want. So, in the meanwhile, what's the best scenario to go with?
Yeah, so I kind of differ slightly with Paras with regard to what he says about population control, right? Population control is a very delicate subject, right? It's the way I explained it is that population control is a little bit like weight, right? Losing weight is good if you're overweight, but then you should not lose weight too much, because that will make you very thin as well, right? So, population control is a little bit like that. If your fertility rate goes too low, then you have drastic changes in the demography. You'll have a very high older age population and very low young age population, right? And so we have to maintain it. That's the reason why there is a 2.1 you know, replacement level that is kind of given over there, right? So, but of course, there are there could be debates about whether, you know, fertility rate should be the right measure, right? And I've had many discussions with many colleagues on this, and some of them feel that, you know, for looking at fertility rate by itself may have its consequences, because, you know, in Indian history also in the past, right, if you're looking at the 1970s, we tried to control population and it led to all sorts of unintended consequences, right? Yes. So I would kind of also suggest that, yeah, maybe we hinge on fertility rate as one of the measures, but broaden the aspects, similar to, for example, what the something like the 15th Finance Commission has talked about, and make it kind of broader so that you can account for a few other kind of parameters such as education. So I think the negotiation will really be about what should be the measures of performance that we should include. Should fertility rate be included by itself, or should we include other parameters alongside that as well? But here I would want to separate, you know, the way we do with regard to delimitation, which is about political equality, with economic transfers, right? So we have to be, clear about the differences between the two, right? Because political equality ensures that everybody has the same vote, and that vote has the same value, right? And so we can't by, you know, and I'm talking from, you know, theoretical clarity perspective, right? We can't create processes that, for example, give a richer state a higher one vote value than a poorer state, right? We can't also make the argument that, okay, certain states are paying higher taxes, so they should, their 1% vote should be more valuable than other states which have paid lower taxes, right? Because, you know, we can't say, for example, you know, Amitabh Bachchan is the top taxpayer in the country, and we can't say that his vote should be more valuable than a vote of a poor man of India. So political equality, that principle has to be maintained. And this is different from how economic distribution happens, right? In economic distribution, sometimes there can be inequality, right? You can give higher economic resources to a poor person so that they come up, then you can give to a richer person. But political equality has to be equal. So that's the reason why I'm saying that we have to be more careful. We have to have a roadmap where we reach political equality, but sometimes it may not be possible immediately. We should give a time frame, right? There are many things in society that we want. For example, we want gender equality to be there, but it may not be possible immediately, right? It may be possible over periods of time. And that's why we say, okay, we are moving towards gender equality, right? We are not saying that the women's reservation bill doesn't say we have to have 50% seats. It says we have 33% seats, so that we are moving towards equality, right? And so that's the reason why I'm saying that we have to move towards 1% one vote, but we have to create a time frame, and this is where we need to have agreement across various parties. Some kind of a what we call malapportionment, which has happened 40 years ago, we can't change it all of a sudden. We have to give everybody time to kind of settle in. Whether that's about, whether that's 2 decades, whether that's 3 decades, that is something for the policy decision makers to negotiate and to decide.
And this is as much about political theory as much as it about politics. And let me show you a data point here. Now, we ran the calculations based on our factors that we had decided, and we decided how many seats BJP would have won. So in the current scenario, BJP won 239. In the mixed factor scenario, it would have won 244, not a major difference, about 5 seats only. And in the last scenario, it would have won the population base 250, still short of the majority mark. Another option that we looked at, which we are going to move towards now, is for the second part of this, is what if we were to decide seats based on the population of each district? Now, if you were to do that and you were to limit the size of 1 million, which was the case in 1970, you will have 1,662 seats, the house is 888, right? That's almost a double. At 1.5, you have 927. At 2 million, you have 697. And the current is about 2.5 million people per seat. Dr. Fadnis, there's something to say about the constituency and MPs managing as well. The size has gotten too big. It's very difficult to take care of such a big population. What do we do about that?
Yeah, I think that's a very relevant question, right? And that also has to do with the range of responsibilities that MPs handle today, right? And I work very actively with parliamentary research work, and I also speak with a large number of MPs, and they are really overburdened with so many different types of work, right? One is they have to work in the parliament, one is they have to work in the constituencies and so on, right? And serving the kinds of population that you are looking at, I think there has to be a better distribution of it, right? And one of the things that, you know, scholars on, you know, parliament keep talking about is that people today expect everything from MPs, which is what makes them very burdensome. I mean, even if there is, a leak in a particular road after monsoon and there's flooding, right? They go up to the MP to ask them to do work. And that's because they feel that the MP should be responsible for everything, which in some ways they should be responsible, but there should be delegation of duties, right? So in my view, an ideal scenario is such that MPs should be responsible primarily for their parliamentary work. They should be able to get time to think about important legislative issues, which are not only important for their constituency, but also important for the nation and international relations. They should be able to focus on a lot of these things, right? But also have an oversight whether the government is performing well or not. But for them to be able to focus on these very important duties would mean that the day-to-day activities of their constituency, which is about, handling maintenance issues, right, maintaining roads, water supply, these can be, kind of decentralized and given to bodies such as municipal corporations. I think these are local bodies in India are not sufficiently empowered to perform these important functions. And this is a debate that has been going on for long, right? And of course, politicians also don't want to give up power. So they want to keep a power with themselves. But we need to realize that, for the kinds of population in a constituency, a single person or few people cannot do everything. There has to be a devolution of functions. There has to be a devolution of funds. And that will ensure that the MPs, despite having a larger population, can focus on their parliamentary duties and focus on the pressing issues facing the nation today.
Paras, let me get back to you on this issue. We were talking about Tamil Nadu, and you had mentioned how they were trying to do a program district-wise in order to get more structured manufacturing. Now, and you've studied municipal finances as well. Is management of municipalities better in the southern part of the country than it is in the northern part? And what needs to be done in this regard? Because this also leads to a very economic issue as well.
The critical part there is the implementation of and formation of state finance commissions. And we have seen that Kerala and various other states amongst the southern states have been much more better in terms of devolving funds to the rural panchayat bodies or urban local bodies. And that has been a trend for a long period of time. And that's something which needs to be corrected, because ultimately there are certain issues which are catered much better at the local governance level rather than at the state or even for that matter the union level. So that's something that has been done better in the southern states relative to the northern states, and that's the area of improvement where northern states can definitely have a look at it. Because if you see, we have seen that those kind of issues of electricity or urban development, I mean, these are still there in the southern states, but then why they have seen that improvement is the infrastructure development has been much more broad-based, uniform, not only in one or two economic sector districts, but more balance. So that's something which is very important for the overall growth of the state as well.
Got it. Just another point here, right? If you look at the population shares based on how these limits would apply, the 1 million, 1.5 million, 2 million per people, and you look at it, Uttar Pradesh gets 16.4% of the seats of Lok Sabha from 14.7% now. Tamil Nadu gets about 5.9% compared to 7.2%. But if you do 1 million, Tamil Nadu is better placed in that scenario. Dr. Fadnis, let me get to the last question here. Is the example of US Senate a better example here? You do a delimitation, you give whatever population shares are there, but in the Rajya Sabha, you can give more of an equal weightage to vote so that they also have a voice. Can that be a solution as well?
Yeah, I think this is an important point that is currently being discussed, and I think this is a valid exercise for looking at delimitation not as an isolated policy in isolation, but looking at it as part of a larger discussion around, you know, decentralization between the center and the state, right? And so one of the suggestions that has often been made is that, you know, Rajya Sabha also broadly follows a population-based allocation of seats. So why don't we, you know, follow the US example of giving the same number or roughly the same number of seats per state? So I think these are, of course, of academic interest, but they are interesting. And we should consider the whole range of different possibilities. But one is, of course, what should be, a good thing to do, but what is also possible. So I'm not anticipating in this entire exercise, while I acknowledge the innovation and the imagination of some of these ideas, I'm not anticipating such large scale changes happening with regard to how we look at it. I think we should look at smaller changes that could be made that could still kind of change the balance of power between the center and the states and assure the states that will be losing out. I'm a little bit hesitant of giving it a knocks-out texture because, you know, I would argue that, you know, there are states in the north like Himachal, Punjab, and all that who are also overrepresented currently, just like Tamil Nadu and Kerala, right? So I'm a little bit hesitant to giving this north-south color to this entire debate. Yeah. But I think, yeah, it is a chance to bring a larger conversation. And I think this conversation has been brewing some time, right? Because in terms of some of the powers that the states have lost with post-GST and certain other measures, the effectiveness of the, center-state coordination agencies and things like that. I think this is a great opportunity to unpack a larger conversation on the relationship between the center and the states and the states vis-a-vis.
Taking back to Dr. Fadnis's point, Punjab had a 3.89% share in 1971. It's come back to 2.6%. So thank you, Dr. Fadnis, for being on the show. Thanks, Paras. That's the end of our time. It was great having you. And as we unravel the census exercise, which is yet to start, I think we'll have more discussions around delimitation and what the census can bring for us. Thank you.
Thank you.
The delimitation debate is unlikely to have any clear winners. A freeze would mean that the northern states are underrepresented in proportion to their population. On the other hand, population criteria would be unfair to some southern states and states like Punjab, West Bengal, which have done better on population control measures. And then the economics of it would also need to be looked at. South Sharan economy taxes have gone up, but that cannot be a criteria for political equality, as Dr. Fadnis said. Thank you for being with us on Beyond Averages. We hope to see you again next week. Thank you.